Hello and welcome to A Vague Idea. This is a comedy trivia podcast. I'm Nate Regolia. And each week we subject our guests to a list of topics to find out if they have a vague idea. And this week we're talking about something that's, you know, usually pretty disputed. It's a question of like, how much fucking with something should we do? Is art ever finished? I don't know, because we're talking about director's cuts. And this week we're talking about director's cuts with two fabulous returning guests who are both, as far as I know, either directors or cut in some context.
I mean, I am Jewish, so yes.
Yeah, there you go.
And I was born in a different country, so.
but Seth, you are in pretty good shape, so we'll go with that definition of cut. Yeah.
There's a muscle.
Yeah, he's got a bicep.
Woo!
It's not even a tricep. It's so good at what it does. So returning guests, a playwright and D&D game master, altogether excellent human being, Jeff Wolf. Jeff, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be back.
Our second returning guest, he is an actor and I believe a strong drinker, both in that you consume strong drinks and that you are good at drinking.
I appreciate you saying so, and it makes me sound really just like a civilized alcoholic, which I guess I have no basis on which to dispute that. So
I think 2020 turned people into either one or the other. It's either you're a civilized alcoholic or you're an uncivilized alcoholic. There's no buts about it. Seth, welcome back to the show, Seth Harris.
Pleasure as always.
So yeah, Seth, it's been all of a couple of weeks since you were on the show previously.
Yeah, pretty exciting. You did another one without me. I feel a little bit.
It's true.
I strayed from our little so far blossoming relationship.
Your dramaturgical dyad.
Yeah.
Ooh, wow. Those are two really big words that most people listening would be like.
I mean, dyad's only a few four letters.
I was going to say dyad's actually a pretty small word.
Yeah, but it feels like a big word, right?
Sure. Yeah, because I could have just said duo or a pair of people who do drama stuff.
We're thespians.
That's right. From the Isle of Thespos. So we're going to jump in. We're going to talk about director's cuts. Those moments when someone who made a movie decides, I don't like the way I did the movie the first time. I'm going to do it again. So my opening question for both of you.
We should preface this is because the whole world got to see the infamous Snyder cut a few months ago.
That was an impetus for this very conversation. And the Snyder cut will come up.
I'm not among those people.
A little later.
Oh, so interesting. When it comes up, we'll have to talk about it because I think you should watch it.
Yeah.
We'll get around to it one of these days.
My opening question for both of you is, how many cuts of a movie should exist? Okay. Are director's cuts a good thing or just a cynical cash grab? What do you think, Seth?
I don't think we should ever be putting ourselves in a position where a director's cut becomes a good idea, which is to say that I do not think that the studios should interfere nearly as much as they do in the overall creation of the artistic product. If I look at, for instance, the third Spider-Man movie, which did not get a director's cut, which didn't deserve any kind of cut. The third Spider-Man movie directed by Sam Raimi.
Yeah, sure.
Which was terrible. It was an awful piece of pile. It was a pile of shit. It was just the worst thing. And the only thing that I could imagine about that movie was that Sam Raimi just, you know, after trying very hard to integrate as few notes from the studio as possible, just kind of took an approach with the third movie of like, well, fuck it. You know, let's, you want an emo Spider-Man? Cool. We're doing that. Yeah, let's do that.
You want seven villains, none of them developed as characters in any way, shape, or form?
A couple of them show up at the end for no fucking reason. Fuck it. I don't know. Let's just, it's a lot less work for me if I just keep taking these notes, so fuck it. But this is a real thing, right? This is like the studios really do try to, you know.
Yeah, but in some cases, it does make the movie better. And I point to a very famous example of recent history of Rogue One. The studio stepped in and had Tony Gilroy take control. And Rogue One is a very good Star Wars film.
It is. It's one of the best of the recent ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably the good one of the recent ones.
I mean, I like all of them. I like all of them. I love The Force Awakens. I thought Rise of Skywalker was a really good movie. We're not going to get into that right now.
Yeah, we'll argue about that later.
That debate another time. I'm probably more on your side than I am a lot of Star Wars nerds' side, but I don't know if I would go as far as to say like really great or anything.
I really loved it. I loved it. So, but you didn't finish your point. Sorry, you were like it shouldn't be in a.
The point being, you know, like the director's cut ultimately is like supposed to be more of their intended vision or whatever. And so if you just let them do their intended vision in the first place, then you don't have to have a director's cut of the thing. We should only ever have one cut of a film. That should be the one that's done. We can't just Rembrandt it of just constantly repainting and repainting because it's film, it's done. I get to do it in theater, and that's the point of theater, is every night it's a little bit different and a little bit better maybe, and a little bit, you know, more, it's alive, it lives. Film is made and then it's done, and just accept so what it's made.
I'm going to take that part and explain why I think director's cuts should exist. Because as a playwright, after I have a performance, I'll often see something of like, oh, maybe we should change that for a future performance. That in itself becomes a sort of director's cut. It's a writer's cut, but it is. So the next time they do it, it'll be a little bit better. However, this is a live theater production and things change. And maybe with the next cast, what we thought was a good idea with the previous cast was not a good idea at all. So I would agree with the sentiment here. That
Seth, did you say you were going to say Sethment though, weren't you?
The Sethment here,
which I think I mean that's a t-shirt.
The director's cuts shouldn't be necessary, but sometimes they happen for a variety of reasons.
Sure,
like the most infamous reason in recent memory being the Snyder cut, where they hired Joss Whedon because Zack Snyder's daughter he had this horrible tragedy where she took her own life and it was awful, and he was like, I can't be making a movie right now. Especially a movie as big as this. And so they brought in somebody else, and instead of delaying it for a couple of years while he felt better about himself, about, you know, existing, they brought in somebody who then did a shitty job.
And turned out to be a shitty person. Hey, what do you know?
And turned out to be a shitty person who we all idolized for decades, which is really sort of heart-wrenching. You're like, oh, we thought he was this great person, and Joss Whedon is just a pile of crap. So it really sucks. Same with Bryan Singer. I loved his movies, loved what he did, and then he's a pile of crap. Like, why are we? It's horrible to have heroes who just fall for you. But
that's why you should never have any heroes.
That's correct.
Okay, I have a pretty safe one in Lin-Manuel Miranda, so I'm going to say.
I don't know. I think he's going to be. His style of performative liberalism isn't going to hold up in 10 years, Jeff. You're going to regret that. He does stuff, but he doesn't actually mean anything.
Exactly, like taking a totally acritical approach to the Founding Fathers is not exactly what I would call high art, but that neither here nor there. I had that experience with Louis C.K. where I was like, because I was like,
that was devastating.
There was no way that Louis C.K. would ever, and then, oh no, he just masturbates in front of women.
He's like, he's a power grosso.
It's just weird.
Yeah. I mean, and to be fair, like I think that his response when the whole thing came out was actually, he was on point, you know, like he responded to it a lot better than most people do and blah, blah, blah. But nevertheless, like, oh man, you know.
It's so disappointing. But anyway, yeah. So I think director's cuts, I mean, they should exist. And if anything, what's interesting is there are several times where directors have made cuts and redone things and then gone back and said, that was a terrible idea. I should not have done that. I should have kept it the way it was. Steven Spielberg has done that. Francis Ford Coppola has done that. And so I think that's, I think, you know, in certain cases you can tell that they need to be because the director doesn't have as much clout as they probably should because they're new. So the studio is giving all these notes or there's an IP that's just worth so much money, which is what happened with a lot of the Justice League stuff. And the Superman stuff. I mean, like Batman and Superman are worth so much money and the studio is like, we can't screw this up. But then as you meddle with it more and more, it screws up.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, you know, the studio always kind of takes a decision by committee approach of like, you know, we've gotten together and we've talked about it and we think this is how you ought to do it. And what confuses me is that they don't seem to have done this at all with Christopher Nolan.
Right.
They have total creative control.
Yeah.
Mostly for the better, one argues.
Tenet was way too long.
I am not.
Tenet was about 30 minutes too long. I mean, like a half hour out of this film.
I'm not trying to say that Christopher Nolan is God's gift to filmmaking or anything, although generally speaking, I find his films to be more good than bad.
Oh, I agree. I mean, like Memento is one of my favorite movies of all time.
I feel this way about
Inception.
Inception. Oh, I love Inception. One of my favorite movies.
For Inception. That's funny. I mean, I thought it was like really interesting and visually it was striking, but I never, like every time I thought about watching it a second time, I was like, nah, it's not interesting to me.
Oh, I love that. But I don't love it because of the end and everybody just talks about the end. And I'm like, no, the ending is not the best part of that movie. The trying to get out of the dreams before the end is the best part of that movie. When there's zero gravity and it's so fantastic.
Yeah, it's like a ride. He makes very nice rides.
Yes, and I was thinking of Interstellar.
Ah, yes,
Interstellar. See, I didn't like that one much.
Oh, I thought it was amazing. I've only seen it one time in theater, and so to be fair, like, you know, I had the advantage of everything just being profoundly thrust at me.
Yeah. Hey, great job, both of you. I'm going to give you each 2 points on that opening question. I take the position that director's cuts should exist, but that should be the only cut of the movie that ever exists. And the director should have final cut rights all the time, because otherwise, what's the point of hiring the director?
There's several cases like Rogue One, they hired the director and they realized we can improve on this movie. And even he said, was that Gareth Edwards? I think it was Gareth Edwards. Mm-hmm. He said what Tony Gilroy did was much better than what I was doing.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, but I think the thing, like the betterness, like this whole question is talking about the art like a commodity that can be improved. Like, oh, you're making lasagna, but if I add this, if I add salt to it, it'll be better. Well, yeah, that's true. But it's also no longer that person's lasagna. Exactly. To some extent, I would rather have movies come out and be fucking awful, but big swings. Like, I prefer a Boots Riley style, that movie that came out 2 years ago. Shit, what's it called?
Cats.
No.
That was a
butthole cut.
Actually, Sorry to Bother You is a movie that, you know, was really made like by a person movie. Who was not super noted. And it's a big swing kind of movie. It's not a perfect movie.
It is. But like, there's some great ideas in that movie.
So in any case, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I
real quick, when you watch Cats, knowing there is a butthole cut, it's really distracting that the cats don't have buttholes.
It's true. I have not yet watched Cats. I'm kind of like saving.
I only got like halfway through it. It's really bad. I mean, like, it's really bad. But also, I have a problem with the fact that they wanted to make a movie of Cats. I had seen the stage show. There is no story to the show.
No, it's
like it's just poems in a loose story. But like, a movie is made up, is a good movie is usually a driving story. And if it's a musical, it needs to be a driving story to get you to the end. That's why Chicago is so great. Will she get off or not? Will she be convicted of murder or not? It's a great drive to the end. Okay.
Exactly how I use the term get off, but okay. Yeah.
But
I was like yeah, Cats, I was watching for that too. In
Cats
that movie.
Doesn't have that at all. Like, Cats is a mess of a show.
It was a stupid musical in the first place. Like, why would you?
At the time, the costumes and the dancing were revolutionary. But that was early 1980s. We've come a long way.
Yeah, that was at a time when everybody was like, theater is dead because everybody wants to see the next Indiana Jones movie. We need something to revitalize the theater. What if we put a bunch of idiots in spandex and have them sing their names 10 times while saying the word Jellicle over and over again?
All right, let's go to the second question, because we're going to talk about this.
Great job on the opening question. You're both getting 2 points. And now we're going to hop into round number one. Jeff, do you have a vague idea about the Snyder Cut?
Yes, very much so.
Talk about it.
So the Snyder Cut is really sort of the most interesting thing. We talked about it a little bit earlier. So Zack Snyder had to step away from filming Justice League because he had this family tragedy. It was finished, and the final product was not good. I mean, like, I think we can all agree was not a good choice for a movie. So immediately afterwards, this sort of started this swell of release the Snyder cut began. And there was a lot of talk about this probably doesn't exist, which it didn't actually exist. It had the potential to exist, but there was no cut of the movie that Zack Snyder had finished. And he even had to do a few reshoots to finish his movie. And then it became very toxic fandom, with really toxic fans being horrible about release the Snyder cut. And then years later, HBO Max is like, yeah, go ahead and do it. So earlier in 2021, Zack Snyder finally got to release his 4-hour Justice League. There's some parts of the movie that still drive me crazy. I have no idea why it's in 4:3. It's really dumb that it's not in widescreen format. Like nobody really understands that. He wanted it to be released black and white. So glad they talked him out of that. And I will say it is a much better movie than what was released in theaters. It is still too long. You could still have cut about 30 to 40 minutes out of the film, but it's a good movie. I've actually watched it twice, and I've even thought about watching it again because there are parts of the movie, because it's not perfect whatsoever, and there was way too much slow motion, but there are parts of the movie I really, really like especially the ending, with the dream at the ending. And so here's what makes me mad is that dream of the ending is the best part of the whole movie, right? Because you get this terrific conversation between Batman and the Joker that is just amazing. And he should have just made that movie. Like, just make that movie. And at the end of that movie, you get back to the normalness that you had finished up with at the end of Batman versus Superman or wherever you did before that. Because that movie is a spectacular movie. You know, two of the main heroes are dead. One of them is a bad guy. You've got really like random characters working together to try and stop this. Like, who doesn't want to watch that movie? I mean, like, that's an incredible movie. So I am glad.
You know who doesn't want to watch that movie, Jeff? People who work at the studio. They're like, nobody knows.
But that movie would have made so much money.
Nobody knows that. That's the thing. This is they'd be sitting there going like, I don't know who Deathstroke is. Nobody knows who Deathstroke is. Bring Wonder Woman and Aquaman into a movie. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like it just was. I mean, like it's a better movie than what was released. There are parts of it that are really spectacular. And it makes sense. Like, it has a story that makes sense. Unlike the first Justice League, which does not make sense. So yeah, I mean, like I'm glad it exists. I wish we could have done without the toxic fandom, which is now morphing into the restore the Snyderverse because they want his sequels. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's never gonna happen.
You said something about a swell of fandom. And I wanted to say at the time that you said that it's more of an inswell of fandom because it's all incels.
Initially it was people who just wanted to see his version of the movie.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. They were unhappy with this, but then it turned into very toxic.
Well, yeah, because now the whole thing is like, oh, you shelved Zack Snyder's version because you needed to make now all these characters have to represent women.
Well, they wanted to. Here's the thing. He set out to make, a DC universe that was very different than the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Mm-hmm. Like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is quips and ordinary people trying to come to terms with these extraordinary abilities that they suddenly have. That's what Marvel Comics is about. Ordinary people trying to do that. Zack Snyder took a very different approach to the DC movies, where he said, no, we have extraordinary people trying to figure out what it means to connect with being normal. So it's a flip on that. And it actually is a much better way of handling it with that universe, because you have these basically gods. I mean, they are the Greek gods, just as the Justice League, with Superman as Zeus and one of them is Hera and all that. Flash is Mercury or Hermes. I mean, you have this really interesting idea. And then they were concerned because Batman versus Superman, you know, fell so flat. They're like, well, we need to make it like a Marvel movie. And so they brought in Joss Whedon to make it like a Marvel movie, but it didn't work because you can't just make this into a Marvel movie. It's not a Marvel movie.
No, no. I mean, the thing is it's an arguably big swing choice to do in the first place, and to not commit to it is a failure. So yeah, very good. Very good, Jeff. Seth, do you have anything to add about the Snyder Cut? I know you haven't watched it.
I've neither watched the Snyder Cut nor the Whedon Cut. although as a side note, you know, it's a shame about the Whedon Cut. As I guess we have, do we call it that? Or do we just call it the theatrical cut? Whatever. The one that was released. Because, I mean, to be honest, Age of Ultron, I think, is probably my favorite Avengers movie.
Really?
I know I'm not in the majority on that one. I am far from into the, like, everybody basically, like, Infinity War or whatever.
I don't think it's as bad as people think, but
I don't think it's, we don't need to go on a
thing about it either.
But, you know, I thought it was really interesting. I thought it was approached well. I thought What's His Face was really great as Ultron, blah, blah, blah. And so
Darth Vader.
Indeed.
That was funny. I
love the name for him. So what do I have to add about the Snyder Cut? Going back to what I was saying earlier, a director's cut should never be necessary because blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
This case, you know, yes, absolutely. Fucking do
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
He had an idea for the thing. He was on that trajectory. Something happened that he couldn't be the one to finish it. And so by all means, you know, like that is an understandable circumstance because it's like you were going, it's like you were saying earlier, you know, that you, Nate, were saying earlier that...
Me, Nate.
Yeah.
You, Jane.
Hey, Tartan.
That, you know, you want it to be whatever it is. You know, like,
yeah, regardless yeah.
of the fear, you want it to be the thing that the director set out to make. Regardless of whatever, if it's bad, let it be bad. If it's,
The Snyder Cut is effectively the proper restoration of that fresco that old lady painted over. Years ago, where it's like, hey, is Jesus, and she's like, oh, I can do that, and that's Joss Whedon walking and like, here, I'll make this look nice, and then it's a smiling monkey man, and then he goes, oh god, smiling monkey man is horrible, can you put Jesus back? And then yeah, and then you let Snyder actually come in and he makes Jesus sadder than normal, but it's like, well, it's still Jesus this way. At least
the woman made me really hopeful that maybe someday I could get into the fresco restoration business,
right? Yeah, I mean, let's just start a business right now, Fresco Restorations. We'll do it all outside, baby. Great job. I'm going to give you both 2 points for the Snyder Cut. I know, but you backed up the idea that this was one of the few instances where someone should be allowed to do a director's cut, despite your really good point in the opening question. So I'm going to be generous. Round number 3, Seth, do you have a vague idea about the JJ cut?
The JJ cut. Are we referring now to Star Wars?
We are, yeah, absolutely. Uh-huh.
Yes, and to was it Rise of Skywalker that there was all of that commotion?
Yep, very good.
Okay, more so correct. I do have a big idea about it. I remember, who was it that was originally attached to it and left?
Colin Trevorrow. Yeah.
Colin Trevorrow, that's right. And does he pronounce his name Trevorrow?
I don't know. It looks like tomorrow, so I say Trevorrow.
Yeah, but this is English, and so if you assume consistency, you're probably wrong.
I mean, if he wants to be on the podcast, he's welcome to tweet at me at Nate Regolia, and we'll bring him on, and he can tell us how to say his name.
I mean, this is like, you know, it's because, you know, Steve Buscemi pronounces it Buscemi, but it doesn't stop people from pronouncing it Buscemi. Dick Cheney is pronounced Cheney. Anyway, yeah. There are all sorts of these. But point being, I remember reading like a synopsis of what I think it was Trevorrow had in mind for the final.
Yeah, they released the script.
And yeah. It was fucking amazing.
And somebody turned it into a comic book.
Yeah, it was fucking amazing.
But I don't know. I actually thought it had just as many flaws as the what they ended up with, the Rise of Skywalker.
I mean, of course, we're always going to overanalyze the thing that actually gets released and then kind of like idolize the thing that doesn't. Because
sure,
of yeah. course,
the grass is greener on the other thing. You know, it's like if Jodorowsky's Dune had actually been released or made and released. You know, like we wouldn't go, oh my god, that thing that almost existed and it would have been so amazing. We'd be like, oh, what a piece of shit. Like, why would you bring all these really disparate elements together to make a fucking Dune movie? No joke, the David Lynch Dune was actually my favorite movie when I was 10. I would get it from the library like every weekend.
It's not a bad movie.
It's not bad.
Bad as people that want to.
I don't know why people hate it.
Really iconic. Plus, shit.
Now I understand, Seth, why every time. Now, Seth, I understand why every time we hang out, at some point you emerge wearing only metal bikini briefs with your arms raised and your hair bleached, because it's the Sting thing from that day. It makes sense.
The Sting, bro. I got a, you know, I'm Fade Rautha Harkonnen is my spirit animal. It is actually my favorite science fiction novel. I'm really, really, really.
I've never actually read it.
I'm so like, I don't know if I like, I'm, this is kind of, again, going on a bit of a tangent, but I don't know if I should be really excited about the fourth one.
Well, I mean, the guy who made it is the guy who did Arrival, which is probably one of the best.
And Blade Runner 2049, which is a very good movie in its own right.
My favorite currently directing director. Like, he's...
I mean, Arrival is one of the most incredible science fiction movies I have ever seen.
It's amazing. And like Blade Runner, I mean, we'll probably loop around Blade Runner at some point here, but Blade Runner, like, how do you make a sequel to Blade Runner and make it a good? Like, everybody's going to shit on it. But no, he did it. Fucking did it.
He made a good movie.
It is a really, really good movie. Back to JJ Cut. You see how I've been talking about a lot of things that aren't that, because although I had a vague idea, as is the point of the game, about the JJ Cup, cut, I really don't have any more.
The JJ Cup, way more interesting topic.
The JJ Cup is when stars of recent science fiction films all compete against each other, there can be only one.
I was gonna say it's the protective appendage he wears because he never can finish anything in an adequate way, so people are always trying to kick him in the nuts. Jeff, the JJ cut. What can you add?
I know quite a bit about this, being the nerd that I am. So after the movie came out, there was a similar reaction to it than of the Justice League, which. Like Rise of Skywalker is not a bad movie. It's a good movie. There was even a critic who came out at the time is like, wait, you're telling me that like, I can't remember what it was, but he was comparing two different movies. And he was like, you really think that this is better than the Rise of Skywalker? Really? Like, this got a B and you gave the Rise of Skywalker a C? Really?
Was it Return of the Jedi? Because, I mean, let's be honest with
you. No, it was something that was contemporary to it. And I can't remember what it was. So and people were like, they thought that because there were certain parts in the movie that felt lacking, like there really were some plot points that just they kind of skidded over and like left to
numerous emotional beats that didn't pay off in any sort of reasonable way.
They were like, there's probably a version of this that JJ cut that covers all of that, and now he's said that that's not true. But like one of the things is that at the end where it's Rey versus Palpatine, that actually, you know, at the end, she just hears all the voices. There is a belief that at one point, all of the ghosts of Jedi came around her and were like, we support you. And like, it was a more visual thing.
I'm glad it wasn't, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm actually glad it wasn't too, because I think it was really great to have just it all come down to her. And really her will of because what I think is so interesting is what they managed to do really well in this trilogy is that, you know, Anakin Skywalker chose to fall to the dark side. It was an active choice that he made. And then Luke Skywalker chooses not to fall to the dark side. But what they did with Rey is that she chooses the light side. It's an active choice that instead of joining with Ben Solo at any point in time, she's like, no, I'm actively choosing to do what is right, even though I know I have this ability to be the dark side in me. It's an active choice. So I thought the evolution of that was really, really strong. And they did that very well in this movie. And there's some really incredible sequences in that movie. Like when she flips in the air and cuts the TIE fighter in half, it's really spectacular.
That shit was great.
I mean, like, that's easily one of the greatest moments in Star Wars. It's up there with the end of season two of The Mandalorian. So like, I feel like there isn't a JJ cut. There might have been a discussion of different things they could have brought in. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's like we can debate the duel of the fates, the Colin Trevorrow or version of the film all we want. But the fact of the matter is that they didn't feel like it was a strong enough script to make it a good movie. So they were like, this is not going to work. And so that's why they were like, okay, we're going to ask you to leave and bring in JJ and Chris Terrio, and they're going to write a better movie.
Yeah. I great job on both of you. The JJ cut is the purported mythological 3.5 hour long version of Rise of Skywalker, where JJ included all of the things that would connect all of the very jumpy points in the plot of that movie. That's my biggest beef with the movie, is it runs from thing to thing to thing without actually breathing ever. And unfortunately, like, character development doesn't happen a lot while you're running, as much as some might think it can. And it does in its own ways.
Harry Potter movie.
Right. I don't think Colin Trevorrow's movie wasn't made because it was bad. I think it wasn't made because there was such a negative reaction to Last Jedi. And because we live in a time where those very studio people who make these decisions are so gun shy because they think like, oh, well, this property has to make...
When there's billions of dollars at stake, right, you can understand why they are.
I mean, I can't. And I agree with Seth here, because the thing is, okay, look, Star Wars was only good when it was somebody's artistic thing. Since it has become a property that is replicated to print money, it is garbage. It has gotten worse and worse.
You really think The Mandalorian is not?
No, but that was something that they took a swing on. They said, oh, Jon Favreau will try to make something with somebody we've never heard of. And guess what? It turns out it's good when you let somebody make a thing. And the problem with the way that the sequel trilogy went is... They were like, okay, JJ will do the opener because everybody, we can trust him to land, you know, to do this kind of spectacle. And then they gave the second movie to Rian Johnson, and it was a split audience on whether it was good or not. And they went, oh no, we're going to respond to the bullying of all the actors in the movie by kowtowing to the incels that bullied them, not addressing any of the valid negative criticisms of the film. And we're just going to bring JJ back because we don't know what to do. And if we give this to a nut, to yet a third person, maybe the vision will get out of hand and we won't make any money. And that's the problem.
What happened with Justice League terrified other studios, because Justice League did not make money at the box office.
Yeah.
And they were freaked out about it.
They sure were. Great job on the JJ cut. You're both getting points, but one of you is getting one more point than the other. And that's Jeff. Jeff, 3 points. Seth, 2 points.
That's all right. You're going to nail the Blade Runner question coming up, because I've never seen either film.
Hey, there you go.
Oh my God. Are you fucking kidding?
No.
Oh no. No, Blade Runner is fucking amazing.
It's really good. It's really good, Jeff. Do not watch the Snyder Cut a third time when you can watch both Blade Runners.
Yeah, but I don't know which cut of Blade Runner to watch.
Well, we're going to get into it. We're going to get into it in a few minutes. But first, we're going to play our first game. It is time to play Fuck, Marry, Kill. And this week on Fuck, Marry, Kill, you have your choice between 3 director's cuts. First, we have Donnie Darko, the director's cut. Second,
is
we have...
Is a director's cut of Donnie Darko?
Yeah, there absolutely is. We're going to have Apocalypse Now Redux.
Oh, dear.
Oh.
And Return of the Jedi Special Edition. So which one of those films are you going to fuck? Which will you marry? And which will you kill?
Can you tell me a little bit more about the Donnie Darko director's cut?
Sure. Like, okay. The Donnie Darko director's cut is about 15 minutes longer. The songs on the soundtrack are moved around in the film a little bit. And then they go into more specific detail about the whole like time looping and time traveling components of it. So that's very spelled out. It's actually a more watchable movie, I would argue. I don't know that it's a better movie because it's less... impressionistic, but it definitely like tells you what the movie's about because nobody got it from the theatrical version. So you have
to go first because I don't know.
Yeah, Seth, you can go first. You've got Donnie Darko, director's cut, Apocalypse Now Redux, the famously hour longer version of Apocalypse Now, where they spend a whole lot of time at a French plantation in Vietnam, and the Return of the Jedi Special Edition, where the music numbers are much longer and much worse.
Yeah, so I think it goes without saying, kill Return of the Jedi Special Edition. There's nothing about the Special Editions, aside from the removal of the orange blur underneath the fucking speeder, there is nothing about the Special Editions that I am a fan of. So kill fucking Special Edition.
There you go.
I will marry Donnie Darko Director's Cut.
Okay.
I will do that because, I mean, it is just a little, it's like a little bit more sensible, you know, like it's a little bit more palatable. And I feel like if I'm going to spend the rest of my life with a director's cut of a movie, I think we'd just get along better over time, right?
Sure.
It wouldn't be exciting. It's not going to be one of those like sparking romances, but it would be, you know, just like a mellow existence together, and we would enjoy each other very much. And then I will not just fuck, but I will have tantric sex with. Now Redux.
Well, with that extra hour, you'll need that.
That's about the only fucking that you're going to be doing. Is just like, I mean, full on, you know, meditative sex that culminates in a climax with a fat Marlon.
The horror.
Yeah, yeah.
The horror.
Yeah. Someone's gonna chop the head off a bull, and that's the end of the sex. Yeah.
All right. So yeah. He's gonna hate my rankings. So I'm gonna fuck the Donnie Darko thing.
Okay.
Because that movie's so fucking weird. So like you just can't, like, I don't wanna, I mean, like, it's good to watch one time and then you're good. You're good for your life. I will kill the director's cut, the redux of Apocalypse Now, because there's nothing wrong with the original version of Apocalypse Now. It's a fantastic movie. Even Francis Ford Coppola has gone on record and said, I shouldn't have done the redux. Like, it's completely unnecessary. Like, the Apocalypse Now is a fantastic movie. There's nothing wrong with it. And then I love Star Wars, so I'm always going to marry my Return of the Jedi, even if it has to be the special edition.
Interpret the question slightly differently. I was only considering the director's cutness of it.
Yeah, but I would rather watch Return of the Jedi Special Edition over and over again than any of the other two films.
All right.
I would actually prefer to watch. Probably would not prefer to watch Donnie Darko over and over again. But but I would prefer to watch Apocalypse Now over and over again.
I mean, like, and I agree that the special edition of Return of the Jedi did not make it better. But of the special editions, it's not the worst one.
No, it is not. That's fair. That's true.
A New Hope is the worst special edition because of all the shit that he did. Like the Jabba the Hutt scene that's unnecessary. The whole mess with Greedo, which I play a Star Wars game called Galaxy of Heroes, and you play as Han Solo, and he has an ability that literally says shoots first. Mm-hmm. Because even the creators of this game were like, this was the dumbest choice ever.
Yeah, very, okay. Very good, both of you. Seth was absolutely correct, so he's going to get 3 points. Jeff, you get 2 points. And here's my reasoning, okay? I have slightly different reasoning than both of what you laid out. The Donnie Darko director's cut finally figures out what it's supposed to be most palatable to everybody. And that's who you want to marry, is somebody who knows themselves. That director's cut actually gets to the best version of that movie that's going to be, which is still not a great movie. It's not something you want to watch all the time. But, I mean, if you're perpetually 17 and angry, it's great. And you would watch it every single day of your life until you died. You definitely have to kill the Return of the Jedi Special Edition just as a demonstration of will. It's like, hey, look, I'm sorry, but you do not add a musical number to a movie that has such perfect pacing in its theatrical cut. Like, it's one thing to put an annoying beak in the Sarlacc pit, and it's another thing to break up the tension of invading Jabba's palace with inconsequential alien blathering for like 5 minutes. Among everything else. I mean, there's just so much stupid shit that happens that it's like someone needed to say no, don't touch it. You just need to remaster this. You did good. You did a good job.
Christ, the fucking end of the movie with the fucking Ewoks celebrating all that bullshit with the fire.
The OG weird Ewok song where they're drumming on Stormtrooper skulls is better than like scanning around a universe that we only know of because the prequels exist. and being like, oh, we're going to be self-referential to the stuff we fucked up otherwise. No, no, thank you. Dies. Dead. And then, yeah, you fuck the Redux because you're like, one weekend in a French maison in the jungle is a fun time. But you definitely don't want to stay there because it's a mess. So, yeah, great job. You're back to tied. 3 points for Seth, 2 points for Jeff. We're going to jump in around number three. Jeff, do you have a vague idea about E.T., the 20th anniversary edition?
I do. Yeah, I do. This is when I was talking about how Steven Spielberg said he was unhappy with the director's cut. This is what he was talking about. He really regrets that he took out the guns and put in walkie-talkies because he was like, I should have just not fiddled with it. And honestly, it doesn't really change the movie at all. Although there is something to be said that how horrible adults are. Like he shot that film so cool where you barely ever see the adults' faces.
It's like it's,
yeah, like it's very effective. And then when you do, you know, giving them these guns and stuff like that made them even more menacing to these little kids. So I've been like, I feel like you lose a little bit of that with that, but even he said, oh, I should have never done that. He was like, that was dumb.
Very good. Very good. Seth, anything to add about the 20th anniversary E.T.?
You know, it, by strange coincidence, yes. When I was a senior, junior in high school, I had this job as a telemarketer. My shift was 4:30 to 9. So I'd be at high school all day and then go be a telemarketer. But point being, so my shift would end at 9 o'clock. And every night after I was done, because I had to like fucking decompress, I would just go to the Dollar Movie Theater, which in my hometown was Safari 7. Mm-hmm. I would go to the Safari 7. It was a fucking dollar to see a movie. It was a shithole of an old movie theater. But, you know, so I'd just watch whatever the fuck happened to be showing on, you know, like at that time that I hadn't seen yet. And by coincidence, the re-release of E.T. was among those. And I remember, so, you know, like to contextualize it, I was seeing shit like Walk to Remember.
The Mandy Moore flick.
Yeah, the very same. And what's that one where he doesn't have, Ashton Kutcher doesn't have sex for 40 days and 40 nights? Is that?
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was Josh Hartnett.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Josh Hartnett. Yeah, they're the same person.
They're the same fucking person.
You know, like it was that time. And so I was watching these terrible, I mean, I walked to remember. Yes, of course I cried because I'm a human being, but like, it's still, you know, like you're crying and you're like, God, you just fucking manipulated me into this shit. Anyway, E.T. was probably my least favorite of all the bullshit that I went and watched because it fucked with something that really was special, that it was, I mean, E.T. is a special movie. Really, Spielberg is all fucking special to me. Jaws might be, I mean, it's definitely my top five movies of all time, right?
Yeah.
Jaws, I think, is an almost...
It's one of the best movies that's ever been made. Absolutely.
Yeah. Which is fascinating because he had to be so creative because they couldn't get the damn shark to work.
Yeah, yeah. It could have been a very bad movie.
This, I think, is like one of the discussions to have when it comes to director's cuts, right? Is going back and trying to undo the shit that you were forced into because of, you know, the special effects you had available at the time, because of budgetary constraints, whatever. Star Wars is the worst offender of this, the special editions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's so much shit. Star Wars would have been terrible if he'd had computer, I mean, as we know now, it would have been terrible if there had been CG available.
Yeah.
The point only being, you know, like, I think the worst kind of director's cut, the worst kind, is when they try to make it something other than what they were forced into by the constraints of the time. Because I think the constraints are so much of what make us creative. It is how we figure out how to work our way out of the fucking
Jaws.
Box trapped in. Jaws being a Marvel example. I mean, my favorite
Psycho. Parts
of Jaws have nothing to do with the show. My favorite parts of Jaws are our Brody and his kid at the dining table, you know, just like these real moments of human connection and love and care. Yeah. And family and all of that, you know, along with Richard Dreyfuss, you know, because Richard Dreyfuss, but those moments at the dinner table are some of, I think, the most profound moments of depicting family life ever shot. They're simple, but they're so fucking real and beautiful. And then you have E.T., which again is like portraying a real middle class family life, you know, and all of that. And then this fucking wild shit comes into it. A fucking alien lands into your goddamn middle class family life where kids are just being kids and sticking around and riding their bicycles and whatever. And the idea of fucking police coming at kids with their guns drawn is powerful. It's so fucking powerful.
It sure is.
I remember even as a 17-year-old going like, oh, so you've just completely deflated this moment. You've taken all the air out of this shit. And as a consequence, in spite of the fact that I love E.T., I think it's a marvelous movie. It was one of my least favorite theatrical experiences at the Dollar Movie Theater after I was done working at the telemarketing place when I was a junior in high school.
Yeah, well done. I mean, I think, so the big thing with, you know, talking about the special editions of Star Wars, talking about this, the big problem is that there was this arc of hubris that happened, right? For Spielberg and for Lucas especially, where it's just like, oh, you know what? I didn't do it as good as I could have done it, and I can do it better. Or in Spielberg's sense, I think it's mostly that he was like, oh, geez, gun violence is getting worse in this country, and I don't want to promote it in my classic film. So I'm going to take the guns out of a situation where they very evidently would be, because let's be honest, bad guys are not, and they're obviously bad guys. They're state operators, and it's a very imposing, scary sequence that I think haunted all of us as children when we saw it the first time. Like when they wake up and the whole house is tarped and everything is crazy, it scared the shit out of me for a long time. But the thing is like you take the guns away, like they have guns because there's an alien in suburban America.
Right.
And the government's response to threats of a nature that they don't understand is how big of a boom can we throw at it? And that's what they do. So, it wasn't going to be like a bunch of guys walking, like they weren't going to have a contemporary sort of social services group.
And it's totally the contrast between, you know, like how a kid encounters an alien is like, oh, holy shit, you know, like a fucking alien.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a Reese's Pieces.
And a government encounters an alien and they go, oh no, you know, our entire concept of what life on this planet means is completely derailed now. And we have to respond to this in a huge way and contain it. And nobody can know about this thing. And this is, you know, and they freak out. Whereas a kid's reaction to it necessarily, because they're a child, is very innocent.
They have curiosity and no power. So they're just like, what's your deal? Whereas, a government is like, oh, we'll release the alien stuff only once a weird internet asshole creates a conspiracy that causes half the country to completely question the way the government works. That's hashtag news of the day. Great job, both of you. 2 points each. And now, round number four. Jeff, do you have a vague idea about Superman 2, the Richard Donner cut?
Oh, I do. Yeah, I very much so.
Talk about it.
So I actually never watched it because I'd seen Superman 2 so many times. And I'm actually going to talk about a different cut, which is probably the best cut of the movie, which was the TV cut, because that's when I first saw Superman 2. And they took a lot of scenes because they wanted to make it a full night of a movie. They needed to make it a little bit longer. So they took a lot of the scenes that Richard Donner restored and put them into the movie, but still left a lot of the slapstick stuff that was part of the theatrical release that Donner took out during his cut. And that included the resolution with the guy in the diner that wasn't in the theatrical cut. It included a lot of the good stuff from the Donner cut. It's interesting because there was even an ongoing discussion that's probably the best cut of the movie, but no one has that because that was destroyed long ago. Is the TV cut is probably the best cut of the movie because it took the good parts of the Donner cut, kept a lot of the fun stuff from the theatrical release, and made it like the movie that most of America knows is the TV cut because most of America saw that version.
Surely somebody somewhere has
they've looked for it, a
VHS copy in their attic, you
probably
know, recorded off the TV,
but you would never be able to remaster that and release it on a DVD or anything like that.
But there's McDLT commercials in there and all sorts of good stuff.
If we still have the Star Wars Christmas special available to us.
Well, you're right. It might be somewhere, but I don't know that it is. I mean, like it is, but the Star Wars Christmas special that's on YouTube is not high quality.
No, I mean, it's like, fucking terrible quality.
Yeah, but that's the only way that it's watchable. Because if it was in like, if it was in 1080p HD, it would be like, oh fuck, I can't look at this. This is this bad, and they put this much time and effort into making this thing look this good.
What I really love is that now, like modern things,
right? It's literally looking into the Nietzschean abyss to see a 1080p version of the Star Wars.
What I really love is like now Guardians of the Galaxy is going to do a holiday special, which I think is really fun. The Lego holiday special, Lego Star Wars holiday special, was actually really good. I really recommend it. It's on Disney Plus, and it's really fun and funny and a pretty good story. And Solar Opposites is doing a holiday special, which I think will be really, really funny as well.
Okay. Yeah. Seth, anything to add about the Richard Donner cut of Superman 2?
Nope.
Great.
All right.
So the whole story was, you know, Richard Donner directed the first movie. Right. He was supposed to direct the second movie. The studio fired him. There was some sort of disagreement. They brought a different director in. That director punched it up with a lot of slapstick. Fun fact.
Donner was fired like in the middle of shooting Superman 2. He had shot a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I think
he was
like 75% done with it. I mean,
And the whole cast was very upset too, because like Christopher Reeve and Margot Kidder were pissed off about it.
Christopher Reeve was so pissed off that he jumped off his.
Did.
Youch.
Mario Puzo was one of the screenwriters for the movie.
This I did know.
I didn't know that.
Which is fucking bizarre.
Isn't it weird?
There's so much weird about stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's sort of like how didn't Jonathan Demme write the first crawl for A New Hope?
Oh yeah, probably. I mean, that's the thing. It was like it was the 70s, and there were 9 people, and they were all just hanging out together doing all the movies together.
The crawl of A New Hope.
Yeah. So apparently, this Donner cut exists with footage that he reshot.
Brian De Palma wrote it. Brian De Palma.
Oh, De Palma. Cool. That's funny.
That's a good fact.
That explains why there were so many like light reflecting puddles in that opening crawl.
But it's so random. Like De Palma was like wrote this for George because they were all such good friends at the time.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I mean all of them, like Spielberg and Lucas, like they were
De Palma just, and yeah, all of
Scorsese
them.
And I mean, they just were buds. They were this little group of,
and they all made their artistic films, and George had made American Graffiti, and then he's gonna like, I'm gonna make something different, and they were all like, holy shit, George.
I mean, George is like, if it had just been George Lucas making A New Hope, it would have been
if George Lucas had made A New Hope the way he wanted to, we would not have Star Wars in the way that it exists as a force now.
Like it was his wife
re-edited the whole movie.
Yeah. I didn't know this
doesn't make a lick of sense.
Yeah, his wife completely re-edited it after, because I think Lucas showed the original cut to Spielberg and De Palma and all these, like all of his friends. And they all were like, ooh, yeah, cool.
You spent $80 million in Tunisia for this?
Right. And then his wife did a complete re-edit of the whole thing. And that is what we know and love today. And so she came in and just totally salvaged a garbage fire.
And then the best movie of them all was written and directed by totally different people.
Yep. Empire Strikes Back had nothing to do with George Lucas whatsoever. I mean, he was like there. He was around.
He had a lot of input on the story. Even Kirshner says he had a lot of input on the story.
Yeah. I mean, they were following his guidelines and everything. And they're also contractually obligated to say he did a lot of work on the movie because, of course he did. But when you know that Kirshner was a director who was able to go, Harrison, that's a great read of that line. Don't say I love you too. Say I know. That's way better. Good work. Way to ad lib one of the most prominent and meaningful moments.
I never knew this about the editing.
Are you researching it right now? Or are you looking?
Yeah, I'm looking it up. I never knew. I feel like I know everything about Star Wars, and there's always something I didn't know.
Yeah,
I know like the names of all these characters and stuff like that, and like I knew the name Yub Nub is the name of that original song at the end of Return of the Jedi.
Yeah,
like I knew. I'm like
back when we did it right. Released the Yub Nub cut. Great job. Jeff, 3 points on the Richard Donner director's cut. Seth, 1 point.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense.
And now we're going to jump into our second game. It's time for the Thunderdome.
Thunderdome.
But yeah, this week in the Thunderdome, we have two excellent, cuts of the film Blade Runner facing off in a battle to the death. So I ask both of you, who wins between the director's cut of Blade Runner and the final cut of Blade Runner? Seth, let's start.
I'm sorry, say the question again. I was still reading about this editing thing.
Between the director's cut and the final cut of Blade Runner, who wins? Which, yeah. which I know is outside of your area of expertise, Jeffrey. So I will just, I'll take this one. And
can you tell me the difference between them? Because there's the theatrical cut, the director's cut, and the final cut, right? Right.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't there a fourth one, or is there just the three?
The final cut is final.
Yeah. Okay. So what's the difference between the three cuts?
The theatrical cut features a lot of voiceover from Harrison Ford and the studio-imposed happy ending that he and Rachel drive off into the sunset, and it appears that they're just going to escape from the dystopian nightmare into a countryside of bliss. Woo. The director's cut was a response made kind of in reaction to people not liking the theatrical cut very much. So they undid the happy ending a little bit, but they didn't actually consult Ridley Scott at all. It was called director's cut, even though Ridley Scott had no involvement in it. So they made this movie that had a different set of voiceovers. It threw in a dream sequence of a unicorn and changed some of the ending voiceover. And that was about it. The ending was slightly less happy, but it was still extremely ambiguous and not satisfying. And then the final cut is Ridley Scott actually going in and saying, hey, look, no voiceover. We're not doing that. It's got the dream sequence.
So there's no voiceover in the whole film.
I don't think there's any voiceover at the end. There might still be some at the beginning. I haven't watched the director's cut in a couple of years, but
in a minute.
But it brings in Ridley Scott's originally intended harsher end, which is to say they're probably both going to die.
Yeah, but we find out later. No. To answer your question,
yes, battle to the death. Who wins?
Final cut. I mean, come on. Like,
what seems like the one I should watch is the final cut. So yes, the final cut would win.
Well, and the final cut wins because it's fucking hard, man. You know, like, it's been through some shit. It's seen the world.
The only differences are these minute changes to the ending.
Well, I mean, not the only, the dream sequence I forgot was on the theatrical.
And
that's important. It is all tweaking, but it's good tweaking. The final cut is a very well tweaked version.
I'll watch that version. Yeah. So now I feel like I can go watch the film because I know which one to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I wonder how many cuts of 2049 we will get.
Probably just the one. It didn't make enough money to warrant anything else.
I mean, it was a well-celebrated film. I think everybody...
It just didn't make the money they needed it to make.
No, it didn't. But Villeneuve proved himself. He got to do Dune, which is a huge property. So, you know, like, I think ultimately a success. I don't need it to dwell at the box office. All I need is for the director to be able to do whatever the fuck he wants. And he
just propel me to the spiciest spice there is.
Yeah. Get me on that desert planet.
Yeah.
Arrakis. More like I rock this. Oh, man. That was.
Hey, fun. That was good. That was good.
I don't know.
Yeah. I like that. Hey, great job. Great job. So, yeah, the Thunderdome makes sense. You're both agreeing that it's the final cut. I agree completely. Final cut absolutely wins. Seth knew more about it. So Seth gets 2 points. Jeff gets 1 point.
That's fair.
Now,
tied again.
From the makers of Pommes Pommes de Terre, it's La Chose Francaise Arbitraire. That's the arbitrary French thing. And the only thing that's French about it is the name. So here's my arbitrary question for both of you to answer. You are the director of your life's story. What's something that you'd edit out in your director's cut?
Oh, fuck.
All the masturbation.
Oh, no, I'm keeping that in. Yeah, I'm keeping that
in. Yeah, Jeff's not really into... cinema verite, I guess.
Well, there's a lot. I think it's a problematic question because if you were to make a movie about your whole life and didn't edit stuff out, then it would just be a really long, boring movie because most of our lives are generally boring. Like nobody needs to watch me watching movies or reading a book. Or going grocery shopping. Because you would really define it about what you would include. I mean, I was actually thinking about this, like best days and worst days. So like I have best days, you know, the day I got married, the day I adopted my kids, and then worst days, the days I almost died, plural.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Died? Three.
Stop doing that.
Yeah. yeah, three just with my heart. Because I had a heart attack, and then I had a surgery later for another problem with it, and I almost died that day because they had to put in a chest tube, and then later they realized they hadn't fixed the problem, so I almost died again. If you were to make a movie, any sort of biopic is generally the best days and worst days. So I guess, like, are you saying what best day and worst day would you take out?
No, I mean, you're reading a lot into what I said. All I said was you're the director of your life story. You're not even making a movie necessarily. I'm just saying, what would you cut out of your
life?
I mean,
I would love to have cut out the times I almost died, but
that seems like a good choice. Yeah.
They're a big building block of who I am today. Right. So, I have a lot of regrets about, I'm a very shy person. Seth, I know this is fascinating to you, having never actually met me in person other than the one time.
We have met in person one time.
Yeah. So,
and you weren't shy then. I'm pretty sure you were like, hey, who are you?
Yeah, we had a nice conversation.
Well, I'm really shy when it comes to women. And so there are a lot of times in my life where I clearly should have done something about the woman I was with and had no gumption or clue what to do. And then, but if I had taken those avenues, I wouldn't have ended up with the wonderful woman I'm with today and with my wonderful children. So it's probably good that those things didn't happen. So I don't think if you're directing your life, you can say, I would take this out. I mean, like, I would probably take out the ending because who wants to die? So I feel like, I mean, like, I don't feel like you can take out parts of your life because they make you who you are every day.
All right. Okay. That's a fine answer. Seth, what do you think?
I was kind of thinking along the same lines of, like, you know, yeah, I could cut out the things that I don't like about my life, or like the things that I have not liked about my life. But that's not because in order to understand where I am now, you need to understand, you know, like I need that arc. I need the, you know, oops, I fucked up. And therefore, you know, like so what would I cut out? I mean, there's the obvious, the, like, you know, like you say, like the boring, just nothing's happening right here kinds of things. And I'm trying to think if there's like a segment of my life where that's really all there was. And I can't think of, like, I could cut out junior high.
Everybody could cut out junior high. That's a terrible time to be alive.
It was an awful time to be alive.
Yeah.
But I learned a lot from being alive through junior high. You know, like,
junior high's
all
the
horrors of it really informed who I became. I did theater when I was in junior high. You know, like I had a crush on Barb Sternad and never told her, but then later, you know, like almost told her, but didn't, you know.
See, I was really awkward and shy. So all the girls who I had crushes on, I'm almost positive they knew it.
Oh, I have no question. I have no doubt in my mind that Barb Sternad was well aware that I had a significant, you know. Oh, man. You see, now I'm thinking about, like, moments in that time. Like, there was this girl called Michaela who worked at the, she was a year older than me, and she worked at the little bakery that was, like, down the way from where I grew up. Quality Bakery. I don't think it's there anymore, sadly. And I would go in every day and get a donut and just sit and talk with her for like an hour. And I wasn't able to cross the bridge to, like, and can I kiss you also? Is that cool? Cause I'm 13 and you're 14 and, you know, this is time for us to start.
I got a better one. I took this girl from college to my homecoming dance. Like, my brother who was in college set me up with this girl, and I took her to homecoming. And then we were there for a little while, and then we were like, let's take off and do something else. And she's like, yeah, let's drive around. So I literally just drove around.
Oh, no.
I didn't stop anywhere and do what she expected. I was just so clueless. I just drove around.
Oh, I hope.
It wasn't until years later that I realized what I should have done.
I hope that she did not, because, I mean, you know, I think we as men have a pervading assumption that we're the ones who were, like, most negatively affected because we're, you know, we're men.
Oh, no. I feel like she felt totally rejected.
I
was like, I feel mortified about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I, you know, it's and by no means is the lesson that we should take from that. Like, yeah, just hit on every woman that you are.
No, attacking. Not at all.
That's a fucking terrible lesson to take from it. But when a woman puts herself out there and we don't pick up on that, like, oh, yeah. Man, the number of times that happened when I was in high school particularly. Oh, shit.
Years later, I think it was like 6 years later, I realized what was going on that night. Like I had graduated from college and I was like,
and some girl was like, you want to drive me around? And you're like, oh, I understand what that. Oh, no.
Yeah. No, actually, I think I was reading a thing on the internet where people were talking about missed opportunities. And it was like, oh,
shit. That's exactly what I would. That is what I would cut out, is all of the time that I have spent on Reddit.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
That has informed basically nothing in my life. Nothing is different because I went on Reddit a shitload.
I may have cut out a bunch of the time I spent devoted to World of Warcraft because I got nothing out of that.
See, now we're like, now we're talking. We just had to talk it out.
I did a lot of World of Warcraft in my 20s when I could have been productive as a playwright, as a dating person, and instead I just kept doing World of Warcraft. I could have removed that. That would have been good.
Yeah. All right. Well, great. Hey, good job. You're both going to get 2 points. I think those are great answers. Right now, Jeff, you're ahead 17 to 16. We're jumping into the final topic,
which means you're going to, don't worry, Seth. I always lose this game. He rigs it that way. So you're going to get 10 points and I'm going to get -3. So it's okay. I will not.
Woo! No,
because I actually care about winning this game, and you shouldn't care about winning this game because it's absolutely meaningless. And he just assigns points randomly. So like, why do I care about it? I have no idea, but I've always cared every time I've done it. And I'm going to care this time when I lose, but I'm going to lose because of this.
You shouldn't care because it doesn't matter, but
I
appreciate that you care. And actually you, I think this final question is pretty up. Who knows what's going to happen. The original final topic was going to be the butthole cut, but Jeff, you brought that up earlier, so I couldn't use that any longer.
Sorry.
We already prodded the butthole cut, so no longer able to advance. So instead, the final topic, Jeff, do you have a vague idea about Caligula, the director's cut?
A very vague idea. I know that there is one. I've never actually watched all of Caligula. Like, I think I've seen the parts that are famous.
You only really need to watch for up to, 20 minutes, maybe. I mean, I guess an hour if you're really making an event out of it.
Yeah. I mean, like it was funny because I had two friends in college who one of them was like, I'm going to show you Caligula to my other friend. And so they sat down and watched it. And for a reason passing understanding, I believe in the director's cut of Caligula, like there's more porn, like it's even more graphic sex, but that's all I really know. Seth is actually looking it up on the internet right now, so he wins.
I'm absolutely. No, basically, I think I'm forfeiting because I'm looking it up on the internet because I'm just awfully curious about it. Because he asked and was like, oh, shit, I don't even have a little bit of, I know that Caligula exists as a movie, but that is as close as I get. So here seems to be the crux of the matter, is that the new cut of the film was released by Penthouse.
So is the director's cut more sex?
It was Penthouse.
That doesn't mean there's more sex.
Well, let's see here. Whoever the fuck wrote the Wikipedia on it wrote it before the release of the
20th. See, I thought it was going to be Showgirls because there is a difference between the there's two different cuts of Showgirls. One has an underwater camera in it and the other does not. That's basically is all the difference.
That's a weird thing to know, Jeff.
I read it somewhere.
So the thing with Caligula was produced by Penthouse originally in 1979. It's the only movie that Penthouse has ever made, and it's also the only popularly released movie that features unsimulated sex throughout it. People are actually having intercourse on camera.
Well, yeah, you can tell.
That is not true. Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Well, they're
they are. They are actually having sex. In the sex scene in Mr. and Mrs. Smith,
in the Brad Pitt Angelina Jolie version.
Yes.
Yeah, but they were together then. I mean, like he was cheating on his wife, but they were together then.
I mean, they were only together because they were making the movie together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then they got married.
Yeah, I mean that doesn't
the way one does. The
fact they were having unsimulated sex. They were having, or as we might otherwise call it, sex.
Right. Yeah, it is weird to call it unsimulated. Like, wait, no, we already got a word for that. We can probably just use simulated as the modifier and not put a negative on that. So here's the thing. This was my backup topic because Caligula has arguably the most number of different cuts available of any film that's been released. Really? There are like 10 different cuts of this film that exist because there's like a TV cut that's a whole like hour and a half shorter than the What's theatrical the cut?
Cut.
Literally Hi. Nothing.
Bye.
Yeah. Just the parts where people are like, this is Rome. Okay, cool. We're having a fun time. Okay, bye. The end. Yeah. So you got all these different iterations of this movie. You know, it was cut a bunch of different ways to try like, oh, there's an R cut and there's the X cut and there's the this and that cut. There's tons of different versions of this. They supposedly were releasing a director's cut version that was going to have like another half an hour of footage in 2018. Okay. It was announced. It hasn't come out yet. So they were going to do it. And then that maybe got shelved. And then another production company
burst onto the scene.
Yeah. Yeah. They weren't able to edit to
release it.
Yeah. But the, yeah. So now there's another one that was announced last year and still has yet to come out. So we have
like,
no
why,
idea.
Why though? It's not like people are clamoring for that.
I mean, I think it's one of those things that it's the most urban legendy of urban legend movies. That there's this movie that was released that has Malcolm McDowell in it for whatever reason, and everybody just fucking.
He doesn't have sex in it.
Peter O'Toole and Helen Mirren are both in it.
Yeah.
I forgot that Helen Mirren's like naked in it, but she doesn't have sex.
Helen Mirren is actually remarkably willing to get naked in movies.
Yeah, in the new Fast and Furious, she does a whole striptease, I heard.
I fucking love
Who doesn't love Helen Mirren? Like
Peter O'Toole is probably, I mean, Peter O'Toole is among my favorite actors of all time. Like he's just.
Oh yeah. Yeah. A man made of scotch and the boards of the stage.
Yeah, pretty much. I aspire to be a Peter O'Toole. I think.
The original white savior.
Heyo, great job on the final topic. Jeff, I'm going to give you 2 points. And Seth, I'm giving you 1 point.
I won!
And that means, yeah.
Jeff, I won this finally!
With 19 points. You are the winner.
I'm so happy that I finally won! So, Jeff, of course, we're going to do a director's cut of this later where Seth wins.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, by the time I edit this episode, Seth will have won. I just want to caution you. Like, there's going to be a lot of studio notes. Don't worry.
You can continue to use the I am completely indifferent for my victory as well. You know, like this is something, it doesn't really, it's neither here nor there because I am completely indifferent.
So yeah, Jeff, congratulations. What would you like to plug as winner of this week's episode?
Several weeks ago, I had a
play. So listeners, if you've got access to a time machine or some sort of temporal mechanic.
I don't have it. So the problem is that like when we last did this, it wasn't confirmed that I was going to have that play done. And since then the play has been produced and was very lovely. And that was a great experience. I don't have anything to plug right now that I can plug. There's things in the works, but nothing I can plug. Here's what I'm going to plug. Go get your fucking vaccine.
Hey,
don't wait for more research. Just fucking get your vaccine. Like we need everybody to go to like this thing where people are like, I'm waiting to see there's more testing on it. They did fucking tests. They're smarter than you, dumbass. If they say it's 95% effective and it's safe to give to people, they're not going to not give it to people. Like they're not going to give something dangerous to people. Get your fucking vaccine just because you read on the internet that it might be scary. And as proof that it's so fucking effective, 6 people had blood clots and they're like, hold on. Let's make sure this isn't a problem.
We gotta double check this. It's not a problem.
Yeah. Let's keep going.
Six people out of 7 million.
Yeah, 6 people out of 7 million who had a history of blood clotting problems had blood clots. So just get your fucking vaccine. I'm tired of this argument of like, I'm waiting to see if it's safe. It's fucking safe. You know what's not safe? Getting COVID. That's not safe. You'll just die. So
get out of the hospital. So
while you're waiting to see if it's safe, you can die of COVID. So let's not do that. Just get your vaccine. Get your Fauci ouchie.
I second that plug.
All right. Yeah, Seth, anything that you would like to plug in addition to vaccinations?
Yeah, sure. If you are at all interested in Harry Potter or wizardry in general. I occasionally show up in a immersive experience called the Wizard's Den, which is for grown-ups, not for your children.
because you have sex like Caligula?
Yeah.
That happens after.
Harry Potter and Caligula is the greatest mashup of all time.
Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Bone, obviously.
Harry Potter and the Chamber of Bondage.
It's a potions class, but the potions are cocktails. So look us up on Hidden Denver.
Harry Potter and the Goblet of Cum.
Wow. No, gross, Jeff.
Also,
happy Memorial Day, everyone.
Happy Memorial Day, A. B, in just a couple of weeks, you can come to see me in the Colorado Shakespeare Festival, where I will be appearing in both A Midsummer Night's Dream, opening June 18th, and in The Odyssey by Mary Zimmerman.
Well, who do you get to play?
In A Midsummer Night's Dream, I am Snug the Joiner, one of the mechanicals, who is also a lion. And if Sean Scrutchins gets sick, then I will be Peter Quince. In The Odyssey, I will be if you know the show, it's complicated to answer that question, but I'll be a half dozen different characters at various points throughout the thing. So
do you get to be the three-headed dog?
Obviously, given that we're opening in a little over a month, I have definitely read the script.
You know all about it.
I know so many things about this play and who I am playing. So I will leave that a secret. Yeah. I can know that. Do I play a Cerberus? Time will tell.
Hey, great. I'm going to bail you out on this one. Yeah, great jobs, everyone. Yeah, thank you both so much for being on the show again. And thanks for talking about just these wonderful oddities that are the never ending cuts of films. It's a real delight to talk about that. And always a delight when a new one comes out and you're like, oh, have I seen the definitive version of that movie?
Have I really?
Can I ever? What's Am I going to die and I will never know what Star Wars was actually supposed to be? Probably so. So yeah, thank you both for being on the show. Listeners, if you like this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. That can really help us out. You should also check out all the other podcasts we have in the network. We have a Dungeons and Dragons podcast called Roll for Blank. We have a...
I'm on that one coming up. I'm
he gonna is. Be on that Jeff one. Will be on some of the one-offs coming up here soon.
I will never be on that one.
You might be. The night is young.
Would
it surprise you that we've been playing this whole time?
Roll for initiative.
Yeah. We also have a Sex and the City podcast called Funky Spunk that you should catch up on, as well as a Denver Nuggets podcast called The Hard Pick Mining Company. So you can check that out. If you like the theme song, listen to Michael J. O'Connor's music, michaeljoconnor.bandcamp.com. He's prolific, tons of albums on there, really good musician. And yeah, I'll just back up, like, everybody get vaccinated. You know, it's all three of us have been vaccinated. Lots of people have. There aren't really side effects to speak of. And the very herd immunity that many doubters were clamoring for earlier last year will never come unless we sort this business out. So let's get to it. Let's get to it. It's worth the time. We got rid of polio this way. And not a lot of people have polio anymore. It's kind of a neat thing.
And I mean, you get your flu vaccine every year, right? Same fucking thing.
Yeah, same exact issue. And you're probably gonna have to get this vaccine for a few years too. And I'm into it. Let's go. Let's just do it. So, gentlemen, we have all had a vague idea about director's cuts this evening, and that is a good thing because the devil is in the details. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Fare thee well.
A Vague Idea is written and produced by me, Nate Rigoli, Shannon Page, and sometimes John Peros. Information about topics often come from Wikipedia, so hey, why not donate a bit to that? Sound effects are Creative Commons public domain. If you like this podcast, tell a few people, and subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. And if you happen to like reading science fiction, check out the small press I started with my friend Sean Grokowski. You can find Spaceboy books at readspaceboy.com.